I want to go back in time today to 1927, to the very beautiful country of the Philippines. Back in 1927, you might be aware, the Philippines is actually a territory of the United States of America. The U.S. had gone to war with Spain. It used to be a Spanish territory in the 1800s. The U.S. went to war with Spain in 1898, beat the pants off of Spain. Spain at the time, at the turn of the century, was completely bankrupt, couldn't you know, find 10 cents to string together to send their military anywhere to fight the United States. And in 1898, the U.S. was far and away, you know, in the position that China's in today. It was increasingly powerful, wealthy. It was that new kid on the block that everybody was kind of afraid of. What's going to, you know, who are these Americans? Suddenly they're so rich and powerful and successful. And, you know, suddenly they want to stretch their legs on the world stage and go out and acquire some territory. And, you know, they manufactured this war, the Spanish-American War in 1898, and Spain had to go into debt and everything it could find just to find enough money to deploy some meager military force. And the U.S. government was so awash with cash at the time. Bear in mind, this was before they even passed the income tax. And the U.S. government was so awash with cash that they just wrote a check. And they were able to pay for the whole war, and they came out of it, and they had all this territory, including the Philippines. So the Philippines, again, by 1927, this was a U.S. territory, but because it had such a long history with Spain, there were a lot of Spanish companies and Spanish interests and so forth in the Philippines. And there was one company called, let me make sure I get it right, Compañía General de Tabacos de Filipinas. This is the General Tobacco Company of the Philippines. And what this company would do is they were growing tobacco in the Philippines, and they were shipping tobacco off to Europe, where they would sell it. Europe has a long history of a big smoking culture, as kind of continues today in many parts of Europe. And so this sort of General Tobacco Company in the Philippines, they would grow tobacco in that lush tropical environment in the Philippines that I'm sure so many of you are familiar with. And they would put it on a boat. They'd put it in a warehouse, and they'd stick it on a boat, and they'd send it back to Europe where they'd sell cigarettes. And it was quite interesting how it happened, because now you've got this Spanish company that once dominated the Philippines during the Spanish rule era, and now they're dealing with the Americans. They're dealing with Filipinos under American rule. It's a completely different story. And as big multinational companies do and have always done, you know, they tried every possible way to ensure that they weren't taking unnecessary risks, and they had a lot of insurance policies. This General Tobacco Company had contracted with insurance companies in Paris and in London, essentially to ensure their operations in the warehouse. They wanted to ensure their operations in the warehouse, and they wanted to ensure their operations overseas, and make sure that the tobacco was in transport, that if they got, if there was piracy on the high seas or any number of things, that they were insured for those losses. And so they engaged in insurance contracts. And they wrote off the insurance premiums as expenses to the Filipino company. So they had this Philippine company that was sort of different expenses for insurance were being written off on behalf of the parent company in Spain. And so one day the collector of internal revenue in the Philippines gets wind of this, and they start looking at these numbers and saying, "Oh, well, you know, hang on now. I see that you're counting these insurance expenses against the Filipino subsidiary and not the Spanish parent company, and we don't think that's okay. So we're going to charge you tax on these insurance premiums." And the Spanish company went nuts. And they said, "No way you're going to do that." And they sued them. They sued the basically Internal Revenue Authority in the Philippines back in 1927. They took them to tax court, and they lost. And they continued to lose. And they kept appealing. And they kept appealing. And they kept appealing. And this was a tax matter, right? And so it finally makes it all the way up, because the Philippines is a territory of the United States. It makes it up to the Supreme Court of the United States, Supreme Court of the United States of America. And so in 1927, the Supreme Court hears this case, and they ruled on it. And out of this ruling comes a very famous quote by a Supreme Court justice named Oliver Wendell Holmes. And the quote is actually in his dissenting opinion. And Justice Wendell Holmes states that tax is the price we pay for a civilized society. Taxes are what we pay for civilized society. That's the exact quote. You hear it sort of misquoted in a lot of ways. Sometimes people say taxes are the price we pay for civilization or something like that. But the actual quote, in his opinion, was taxes are what we pay for civilized society. And he was in the dissenting opinion. He thought that the company should be taxed on these on these insurance premiums. He thought, yeah, no, they should be taxed on that. He wrote the dissenting opinion, and in his opinion, he said, taxes are what we pay for civilized society. This is such a famous quote. The IRS even includes it today on its website. They have actually a whole page on the IRS website from quotes from famous people, from Justice Wendell Holmes to Will Rogers and James Madison, former president of the United States. Talking about how great taxes are and what a privilege it is that we pay taxes. And you always hear people quoting that, sort of state loving people out there who believe that, government is our friend, and we have to have these politicians going out and collecting our hard earned savings and our hard earned income at gunpoint and spending it on bombs and drones and wars and all these great things. And people always love to rely on that quote. It's a big crutch. It's a logical crutch. Right, it's kind of an interesting thing in arguments. You hear people quote famous people, and that sort of they throw out a quote and then sort of step back like that. Well, I rest my case because some guy, Justice Wendell Holmes, said something 100 years ago almost that it becomes logical truth. Ipso facto, it's true, and like nobody can argue with it. And of course, I think this whole line of reasoning is absurd. Justice Wendell Holmes said that. Taxes are what we pay for civilized society. And the fact is, there's no objective evidence that that's actually true. If you think about what makes a civilized society, I think everybody, it's probably in the eye of the beholder, potentially in the eye of the taxpayer. But there's any number of things that you could say that are required for civilized society, perhaps peace and stability and security and, court systems that enforce contracts and all these sorts of things. I think many folks would argue, who are listeners of this podcast, would perhaps argue that all of those services which make a civilized society can easily be provided by the free market, by the private sector. And or if governments are required to provide such services, that they should be able to do so at a value add and be able to charge a fee for it instead of having to raise money for the court system to enforce contracts and having to do that through taxes, that they just do it through usage fees. I would remind a lot of folks that there are many civilized places in the world that have very little tax, or in some cases even no tax at all. And they get by just fine. That in the history of the United States, there are periods without income tax and so forth. And yet, obviously, the country developed into something that was quite civilized. I would also point out that at the time that Justice Wendell Holmes wrote that, the tax rate in the United States was as little as 1%. And that was really the tax that they were talking about in this court case, was a tax of 1%. So the next time somebody quotes this at you and says, oh, well, taxes are what we pay for civilized society, you go, yeah, buddy. And the guy who wrote that was talking about 1%. 1%. In 1927, tax rates in the U.S. were so low. Of course, the general wage in the United States, the vast majority of people in the United States made far less than $5,000 a year. Not that there's any inflation. $5,000 a year, that was it. The average tax rate, bear in mind, the average sort of includes all the Bill Gateses of the world, guys who make extraordinary amounts of money and completely skew the tax rate. So the average tax rate was, hold on, I have the quote right here. The average tax rate was just over 3%. Well, let me grab it so I have it 100% for certain. 3.52%. That was the average tax rate. That comes straight out of the Internal Revenue Service. Every year, the IRS publishes something called the SOI, Statistics of Income. The SOI from 1927 shows the average tax rate was 3.52%. Again, that's average. People who made up to $4,000 a year, which was the vast majority of people in the United States, paid 1.5%. So, if we follow this to a sort of logical conclusion, Justice Wendell Holmes is saying taxes are what we pay for civilized society. If that's true, then there's a big gaping hole there and say, okay, well, how much exactly is civilized? Exactly how civilized are we talking about here? If 1% or 1.5% of the price we pay for civilized society, then is 40% tax supposed to be 40? Are we 40 times more civilized than we were before? Given all the bombs and the drones and the body scanners and the wars, I would say no. I don't necessarily view being able to go and invade multiple countries over and over again and dropping bombs by remote control on hospitals and children. I don't view that as 40 times more civilized than the country has been in the past. I think people spew this sort of nonsense out of complete ignorance. Again, they hear a quote and they go, oh, that sounds good. It sounds good, but there's no objective evidence that it's true. There's no objective evidence that taxes, particularly high taxes, are required for civilized society, because there's so many civilized societies out there. I mean, are the Cayman Islands so uncivilized? You know, or is Bermuda so uncivilized? Are the United Arab Emirates so uncivilized? I mean, this is absurd. There's actually no objective evidence that supports this assertion whatsoever. And you might as well say that debt is the price we pay for civilized society, or that, you know, war is what was the price we pay for peace. I mean, all these pithy platitudes sound really nice, but when you actually scratch the surface, there's no substance whatsoever. And the circumstances under which they were uttered were completely different than the circumstances that exist today. Today, it's a completely different, you know, completely different conditions. Again, Justice Holmes made this statement when the tax under question was 1% in the time when the average tax rate was 3.52%. The vast majority of Americans, if they paid any tax at all, paid 1.5%. It's an entirely different world today. And we're in a position now where you've got nearly every government in the developed West is completely insolvent. And this isn't, you know, Simon Black throwing out some sensational adjective, these bankrupt governments are out there. By their own numbers, they're bankrupt. In the land of the free, again, I would encourage you to look at this yourself. You can look at the Government Accountability Office. The GAO publishes financial statements of the U.S. government every single year. They've been doing so for a very, very long time. You can look at the trend. The history on this is very, very clear. At this point, their own numbers, the government's own numbers, show that their net worth of the U.S. government is minus $16.9 trillion. Bear in mind, a trillion is a million million. So minus $16.9 trillion. If you go across, Western Europe and so forth, I mean, France and Spain and Italy, I mean, come on. I mean, the Italians make the Americans look good on a percentage basis. I mean, it's utterly absurd. We're talking about governments that have racked up more debt than any other government has in the history of the world. And they're so desperate for sources of revenue that they're going and they're hunting people to the ends of the earth. They're throwing old ladies in jail because they didn't file a disclosure form. I mean, it's crazy what we're seeing right now. People getting sent to jail not even because they didn't pay taxes, but simply because they didn't file a form. I mean, it's just these intimidation tactics. Just they're so desperate for every penny they can get their hands on that their tactics are all about fear and intimidation. That is not a civilized society. When you have to scare the shit out of your citizens as a means to collect their tax revenue and continue to go up in greater and greater and greater amounts of tax, that's not a civilized society. That is the exact opposite of a civilized society. Civilized society engages in civil discourse with one another. Not literally what we have, you know, taxes have not even become, they're no longer a civil matter in the United States. You talk about what makes a civilized society where we can engage in civil discourse, i.e. there's no threat of violence. Taxes are now the exact opposite. Taxes are all about violence. It's about violence, coercion, intimidation. And taxes are no longer a civil matter. It's not a civilized matter. Taxes are now a criminal matter. If you don't pay your taxes, it's not a fine. They don't sit down with you and have a negotiation. They send your ass to jail. They send you to jail even if they think that you have potentially conspired to not pay taxes. They send you to jail if you haven't filed a form, regardless of whether or not you owe taxes. This is utterly absurd. That's not a civilized society. That's where you treat everybody in society like a criminal. It is the exact opposite of civilization. So this is a complete bullshit quote. And anytime anybody throws this in your face and says taxes is what we pay for civilization, you say, you know what? You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. And here's why. Because this guy was talking about a tax of 1%. And taxes have now become completely uncivilized. By definition, criminal matter is not a civil matter. Therefore, it is not civilized. This is not the way a civilized society conducts itself. And it's only getting worse. It's only getting worse. PwC, one of the largest accounting firms in the world, is now under tremendous fire because somebody leaked some documents of them trying to help these huge companies, these huge multinational companies, reduce their tax burden. By the way, legally, it's not that PwC was saying, oh, here's what you do. You know, you stash it in some account overseas somewhere and then don't tell anybody about it. That's not what they were doing at all. They were using these governments' own laws to set up companies and use their own laws to legally and legitimately minimize the amount of taxes that these companies have to pay. Newsflash, that's their job. That's what they're hired to do. That's why they exist. It's also the fiduciary responsibility of the companies. If IKEA has, and IKEA actually was one of the companies, I meant Pepsi was one of the others. I mean, those are just household names that we're talking about here. These companies are engaging in legitimate practices to reduce their tax liabilities. They have an obligation to do that. Their shareholders include pension funds, which are responsible for paying the pensions of retired school teachers all over the world. They have an obligation to their shareholders to minimize the amount of taxes that they're paying that go to governments which blow it all on bombs and drones and wars and all that stuff. They have an obligation to minimize legally the amount that they're paying in taxes. And so they do that. They do that, and they go and they hire a company like a firm like PwC to say, hey, you guys are in the business of doing this. Help us legally minimize our tax burden. And it's absurd. It's absurd that these companies have to go through 36 dummy shelf companies and, oh, you put this company here and this holding company here, which pays us here, and here's your Dutch sandwich, and you pay this fee here and put the intellectual property over there. It's absurd that they have to do that. I was just having a conversation. I had a nice chat the other day with a reporter from The Economist, and we were talking about innovation and different countries, including here in Chile, and sort of what makes a jurisdiction innovative. And one of the things that I was talking about was, you know, innovation requires that business people, entrepreneurs, individuals, inventors, and so forth are able to go out and focus on what they want to do. Innovation requires being able to try things at a very high rate of speed. You put something out there in the marketplace, you see if it works, and if it doesn't work, you go back to the drawing board, you make tweaks, and you try it again. You put it back out there. You need to do that again and again and again and again and again. How many light bulbs were tried before they finally nailed the model that actually worked? How many times did they try the telephone before it actually worked? Every single one of those was an effort that required somebody trying and trying and trying again. And if you have excessive regulation, excessive taxes, and all these things that somebody has to worry about instead of actually trying the thing that they're doing. Imagine if they were, you know, if when they were designing and trying the light bulb, that they had to stop and fill out paperwork every time and submit it to some government agency and then go, oh, well, now I have to file all the tax forms, you know, on this invention and you know, figure out where the royalty flow is going through. I mean, they would have never been invented in that time frame. Because taxes and regulation, all these things slow down human progress. Innovation can never happen in places where there are these high rates of taxes and where the tax bureaucracy is so cumbersome because I have to stop every 3 seconds and go and fill out forms and talk to government agencies and regulators who have no idea what it is that I'm doing. That's not innovative. And it's really, it hamstrings innovation, hamstrings human progress in a big way, in a huge way. And we're in this position now where that's exactly what's happening, that they're chasing people to the ends of the earth because they're bankrupt, and it prevents human progress from being able to unfold at the pace that it should be or the pace that it could be. It's the thing that's interesting to me is that right now, you know, again, we're in this position in the United States. You know, the Republicans have, you know, have just come to power, and a lot of people are high-fiving that and say, the Republicans are here. So it's all good, right? It's all good. The Republicans are in power. So they're going to deliver us from this fiscal pain that we have. Nobody is talking about real solutions. Okay. It is what it is because of decades and decades of mismanagement. There have been times where Republicans have been in power and Democrats have been in power, Republican presidents, Democrat presidents. We've had Democratic, president, Senate, Congress, Republican, Senate, Democrat. And it doesn't matter. The trend stays the same. They continue spending an obscene amount of money, whether it's wars or welfare programs, they continue spending. Because they're cheered on by a bunch of people who believe that the government should be out there spending all this money, that we have to have the government spending all this money, because if we didn't, we wouldn't have a civilized society. And they continue to do this, and they have to raise taxes, and they're completely broke. And again, this isn't my sensational way of describing the situation. Their own statistics, their own numbers, their own audited financials show that they're completely insolvent. And, you know, what's interesting is then you get people who come to power and they say, oh, we're going to fix it. We're going to fix this. And, you know, and what they do is they vilify, you know, people like, you know, these big corporations that are out there using their own laws. Their own laws make all these tax loopholes possible for big corporations to legitimately reduce their tax burden and be able to deliver more value to their shareholders. And they vilify these corporations, and then they say, oh, we have to put a stop to this, and we have to take that money. You know, here's a crazy idea that instead of forcing these companies to go out and waste all their time and all their money and hire a bunch of worthless consultants to build three dozen dummy companies, why don't you just make your tax code more competitive? We've talked about places where, you know, the U.S. tax code could fill entire warehouses with how extensive it is. And they just continue adding to it all the time. I just got a news flash from the IRS. I think it was actually just yesterday about, giving people time to get their IRAs in order, new regulations about individual retirement accounts. Again, that's a completely different topic. I mean, every time I see new government regulations on individual retirement accounts, I get very nervous about that. Anytime they want to continue to increase regulation on individual retirement accounts, i.e. what you can and cannot do with your own retirement savings, that makes me very nervous. I've been on the record long ago stating that, you know, retirement accounts, this is at least a $5 trillion kitty. They're going to need to come up with funds. You know, they're reaching the point where, the normal go-to guys to buy all their, debt aren't there anymore. And as that sort of continues, as the dollar loses its reserve status, they're going to need new sources of funding. Retirement accounts is a huge source of funding that's available for them. It's completely irresistible if you're a bankrupt government and you've got a bunch of politicians that feels entitled to take other people's wealth. For now, it's still taxes. And they keep going up on taxes. They want to have all sorts of different taxes. And again, we're also talking about the state and local level as well. And the idea is, instead of saying, hey, let's be more competitive and let's embrace innovation and let's embrace technology and let's embrace, you know, bringing more people in and creating actually more wealth, instead of saying, hey, we want to make the pie bigger, they're saying we want a bigger slice of a smaller pie. We want to take a big slice of a smaller pie instead of a good, you know, reasonable slice of a really big pie. And so that's exactly what they're doing, is they're saying, well, we're going to go out, we're going to create more taxes and more regulation and more rules and all these things, and it impedes that human progress. It impedes growth. And so it keeps the pie artificially smaller. These are huge problems. And the thing is that it doesn't matter who's in power. Nobody's really talking about real solutions. You don't hear anybody say, hey, you know what I want to do? I want to completely discontinue Social Security. You know, nobody's going and saying, hey, if you're under 40 or under 45, you're completely screwed. Don't count on Social Security. Nobody's saying that because they know that they'll never get elected if they say that. But the fact is, in the land of the free, you're in a situation where if you look at the total, every penny they collect from tax revenue, minus what they spend on mandatory entitlement spending, Social Security, Medicare, and so forth, and interest on the debt, all these are obviously completely mandatory. They have to spend this amount of money. They blow through almost the entirety of their tax revenue just on mandatory programs and interest on the debt. It's obvious what needs to happen. They have to default. They either default on their debt, or they default on the obligations to their citizens, or they default on whatever obligations they've made to their creditors or bondholders. Somebody is going to get screwed, right? They have to default on their, you know, their obligations to maintain a sound currency. That's the one that's been happening. They, you know, the central bank conjures trillions and trillions of dollars out of thin air. A couple of years ago, before the financial crisis kicked off, the central bank balance sheet was $850 billion. Now it's $4.5 trillion. You know, that's not a consequence-free environment. And what they've done is completely defaulted on their promise to maintain a sound and stable currency. You figure it's only a matter of time before they have to start defaulting on other promises as well. They're going to have to default on promises they've made for how they're going to allocate taxpayer funds and say, I'm sorry, we can't have this program anymore because we have to pay off our debt. Or they're going to have to default on the bondholders. Somebody here is going to get screwed, but nobody's talking about that, right? You don't hear anybody step up to the mic and say, hey, you know what, guys? We're going to have to discontinue Social Security. We're going to have to discontinue Medicare. We are going to, you know, we're going to eliminate entire departments of government. You know, who needs the Department of Energy? Who needs the Department of Education? They're just brainwashing our young people anyways. Nobody says that stuff. You know, these are the real solutions. The real solutions are completely radical, are, you know, the painful medicine of defaulting on obligations. And so, but nobody's talking about that. It's just more lies and deceit and say, oh, it's all good. You know, we're going to balance the budget. Balancing the budget only stems the sucking chest wound. It doesn't actually make the patient recover. And the larger issue there is that when they say we're going to balance the budget, they say, oh, we're going to balance the budget. You know, they put some projection out that 10 years from now, the budget's going to be balanced. And say, yeah, we're not going to do anything too drastic. So, you know, this year, next year, the year after that, you know, we're going to kind of continue, but it's going to improve. And by 10 years from now, the budget's going to be balanced. The country doesn't have 10 years, you know, maybe 20 years ago, they had 10 years, but they hit that point 10 years ago, they were finished. And now they're far past the point of no return, where they have to borrow money just to pay interest on the money they've already borrowed. Barack Obama was fairly famous. This was his big stump speech over and over. You know, he'd get up there during his speech and he'd say, oh, yeah, the Republicans, this, that, and the other. And then people would boo. And then he'd always tell people, don't boo, vote. And that was his big thing. He wanted everybody to go out and vote, you know, for the Democrats. And he sent his wife out with that absurd. I could hardly bring myself to even bring it up. The call for fried chicken, you know, go out and vote and go get some fried chicken. I mean, how insulting is that if you're a voter, you know, and these are the people that are in charge. It's utterly absurd. And then he always say, you know, go vote. You know, voting is completely irrelevant. It's totally irrelevant. You're voting for the captain of the Titanic after you've hit the iceberg. What difference does it make, you know, which mascot is sitting in the big chair? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's such a complete and utter waste of time. It's humiliating and pointless. Every day we cast votes that are far more important. You know, they make this big deal about voting, you know, and they send, you know, all the pop stars out there. I remember the most hilarious one was the Vote or Die campaign. I think, what's his name? Diddy was behind that one. He was going around, you know, with his posse, you know, Vote or Die. It's literally voting for which one of these, you know, which one of these corrupt felons is going to take money out of our pocket, you know, whether it's this party or that party, you know, that's literally a matter of life and death. How utterly absurd. And yet that's the conventional wisdom that people go out and continue to spew this nonsense. But the votes that we cast every day with our own savings are far more important. And that's really the beauty of the market, is we get to go out every day. When you go out and you buy a bunch of bananas, you know, you're telling your local grocer, you're voting for bananas, because you're saying, listen, I have finite resources, I have savings, I have income, and I'm voting, I'm choosing to allocate my resources to bananas, or to a MacBook Air, or to a phone, or to whatever. This is how I'm voting for this particular product or service. And if that particular product or service gets enough votes, then it continues to sort of, quote, stay in power. It continues to exist. It continues to propagate in the system and in the marketplace, allowing more people to vote for it. And if that product or service isn't doing well, if it's not providing enough value in the marketplace, then people don't vote for it. And it goes away. And that's this amazing, this beautiful filtering mechanism in the marketplace that politics just doesn't possibly have. Those votes that you cast with your money are far more powerful. And on a political front, I would argue that you can actually make a much more powerful vote than the vote that you would cast, you know, in the ballot booth with your own money. And it's not which politician you donate to or anything like that. It's actually what you do with your savings. And we've talked about this a lot. You know, if you maintain your 100% of your savings in this system where you know they're going to tax you on it, they're going to take your money, they're going to buy bombs, and they're going to buy drones, and they're going to do all these things that are morally reprehensible, you're participating in that system. And you can make a conscious decision with what you do with your savings to no longer participate in your system. And that's a far more powerful vote. You can take your savings and take it out of that system entirely. You know, or at least you can take a portion of your savings and buy things like precious metals or productive land overseas, which is a really great investment, by the way. You know, or even digital currencies, cryptocurrencies. There's so many options out there right now that you can make a conscious decision to say, you know what, I'm going to give you your little paper savings back, and you go and you buy those drones, render unto Caesar, buddy, and I'm going to go buy something else that's outside of the system that you can't control. And that's a vote. That's a conscious decision that you're saying, I don't want to participate in your system. It's corrupt. It's immoral. And I'm done with it. And you can take a portion of your savings and go and do something like that. And that's a much more powerful vote than standing there in the voting booth and, you know, ticking a box, you know, for one, you know, thieving party or another, neither one of whom actually has real solutions or is willing to discuss them. That's a far more powerful vote. And I would argue that even the more powerful vote is the one that you make with your feet. Because when you actually pick up and move, you're making a statement to say, I'm disgusted with you, and I don't want to have anything to do with this anymore. And you pick up and you go somewhere else. And we've talked about this before. Most, just about every country on the planet, if you're Canadian or you're British, you pick up and move, you're out of that tax system. If you're Canadian and you move to Panama, your days of paying taxes are finished. If you're American and you move overseas somewhere, you actually get substantial income tax benefits. Not 100%. You can't make tens of zillions of dollars and pay zero tax, but you could make a meaningful amount of money through something called the foreign earned income exclusion, which we've talked about, and actually end up getting a substantial amount of foreign earned income tax-free. In which case now, again, you're not paying into that system anymore. You're not giving these guys this huge portion of your savings, of your hard-earned income. You're not directly financing bombs and drones and wars and strikes on hospitals and this absurd foreign policy and all these things. You are no longer directly responsible for financing terrorism. And that's a vote that you can make with your feet. One of the only votes you can make actually with your feet and actually do something. You can actually divorce yourself from that system. It's an extraordinarily powerful vote where you can actually eliminate the taxes that you pay and go somewhere else where the tax rates are negligible or even zero. And guess what? They're still civilized societies. So I'm going to go ahead and cut it off from there. You can tell this is a very passionate point for me. I hear this a lot. There's a buddy of mine, Sam. I have to give you a shout out here. I was looking at a friend's post on Facebook, and he was saying he ran into a university professor who threw out that quote at him, saying, "Oh, you know, taxes are what we pay for civilized society." You know, what a bunch of bullshit! And this is a university professor who probably has never even gone back to read the court case and figure out what they were actually talking about. Justice Holmes is talking about an insurance case, you know, that was a case of 1% at a time when the average tax rate was 3.5%. Taxes don't make a civilized society. Criminalization of taxes is the exact opposite of a civilized society. Using your tax authority to chase people to the ends of the earth and throw, you know, geriatrics in jail for failing to file a simple disclosure form, you know, bullying political opposition groups. This is not a civilized society. It's not how a civilized society conducts itself, and it's only getting worse. The fact that Republicans, you know, have taken over the Capitol is completely irrelevant. Nobody's talking about real solutions. The only real solutions are the votes that you make with your money and the votes that you make with your feet. And all those tools and all those resources and all those options already exist. It's a great big world. There's a ton of really great solutions out there. And frankly, I think that's what makes this time that we're all living in. This is an extraordinarily exciting time to be alive because of all these, you know, there's a lot of crises out there and there's a lot of solutions and it's really exciting. I'm tremendously optimistic about what's happening, tremendously optimistic about the future. I look forward to talking with you more about it. So thanks very much for listening and we'll talk to you again soon.